That nonetheless makes me any less excited about our first guest, which, as I said, is Christopher Quinley of D.M. Moore & Associates. I've known Chris for quite a number of years, and I find that his experience and his business acumen in helping business owners, executives, and professionals here in Orange County, California, with their long-term financial planning and helping to understand, especially after what we've been through over the past year, year and a half, his valuable services became even more obvious as we all look to our financial advisors and the people that we trust to guide us through what we just saw maybe unprecedented, and at least in our recent memory. So let me, without any further ado, bring our first guest, Christopher Quinley of D.M. Moore Associates, on the line. Chris, how are you today?
Doing well. How are you, Rick?
I am fine. Let's start by having you talk to the audience about your path to your current firm, D.M. Moore Associates, please.
Okay. A little bit of background on myself. I went to San Diego State University and graduated with a financial services degree, and then I started my career with Ameriprise in about 2005. And I worked in Irvine branch, starting my own practice and building a client base. And then I had a mentor when I first started. Her name was Christina D'Amore, and she was an Ameriprise advisor for about 30 years, all with the same company. And a couple years ago, she had a position in her team open up, and that's how I ended up with D'Amore & Associates. So we are a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise, and we help clients reach their dreams and goals.
And that's very important. And, you know, many of our listening audience, Chris, are business owners and CEOs and top executives here in Orange County, California. And I know that within the practice that you have, as well as Christine and the greater organization there in D.M. Moore & Associates, you are very comfortable and knowledgeable and have experience in working with those types of individuals, which is why I was so excited today that you agreed to be on the show for a part of the
right.
show.
Right. Yeah, we have a lot of small business owner clients. And, you know, there's a lot of those in Orange County, as you know.
And some of them have very unique needs in that the combination of running a successful business and understanding how to plan that asset, which is generally can be, for many of the business owners, a significant part of their personal wealth.
Right. Also, yeah, and I think a big value that we bring to business owners is really the time saving. You know, business owners are really preoccupied with running their business, and one of their biggest assets is their time that they put into their business. So part of what we try to do is help take some of the things off their plate in terms of managing their retirement, looking at their other goals, and help them achieve that without them spending a lot of time and worry on their own.
So if I could ask you, Chris, of all the things that, you know, you have learned and you experienced, is there a key lesson learned that you use to manage your practice?
Yeah, I think there's really two key lessons that I take with me on a daily basis. One is when I first started, this is very simple, but it's pretty powerful, and that's in this business in particular, as well as with other business owners, you have to follow one simple rule, and that's, you know, do what's right for your clients. So regardless of, you know, your business plan, your business model, ultimately you're working with people and you're helping them plan for their long-term goals. You have to do what's right for them. And as long as you do that, you service your clients well, business will generally follow through with that. So that's one simple but profound thing that we really follow here. The second key lesson for me was what you alluded to earlier, which was 2008. Coming through that was a pretty big learning experience for a lot of advisors. And one of the key lessons learned there was also you're dealing with people. You know, people are emotional about their retirement savings, about their lifelong earnings, and you have to take that into consideration when things like, you know, the end of 2008, beginning of 2009 were going on. So you can't just look at just the numbers. You have to really take into consideration people's emotions and their other goals. But yeah, 2008 was a big lesson in that aspect.
You talk about emotion, and I can only imagine some of the conversations that you must have had over the past 2 years with your clients.
Yes, they were
to help them
all over the map.
See the context of what was happening, and so good insight, and thank you for sharing it.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask, Chris, what have you found to be a successful strategy for marketing your financial service offerings?
One of the successful marketing strategies that's helped me is focusing on a specific niche. So whether it be a small business owner or a specific company, but becoming a specialist in an area. So for example, becoming very familiar with a retirement plan package from a specific employer or large company in Orange County. And then if you can position yourself as a plan expert or someone that knows the benefits of that company very well, your name basically begins to spread within different coworkers and different people of that company. And that's been very successful for me in terms of, you know, growing by referral, is if you can establish yourself as a plan expert or a specific person that works with a, you know, a specific profession or company, you can really grow your practice from that, and you can really become, again, position yourself as an expert and really grow by referral that way. So that's been very successful for me over the past couple of years, and I think that's one that a lot of advisors implement, but it makes a lot of sense for both the clients as well as the advisor.
Well, that I can see how that would be valuable, because many times working with a firm that has a program, retirement plans, they're probably not as well understood as the employer believes, you know, by the employees as the employer would believe. And so your role is, in many cases, you may understand the elements of their retirement plan better than the employee does, because you're able to take that knowledge from one client within the same company and transfer it to the next. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point. There's a lot of things to look at, not just from retirement, but other benefits as well. Do they have disability benefits? Do they have a pension? Do they have medical benefits? Do they have a common one that most people don't know about is, if they retire early, some companies will have a gap medical program where they can have insurance until Medicare kicks in. So all these little, you know, there's lots of employee benefits that a lot of employees don't even know about. But if you can, again, position yourself as an expert and know what specific company really well, you can really, you know, help out a lot of people from that specific company. But you make a really good point. Not a lot of people know what they have through their work.
So then it's almost using social media in the traditional sense, which is word of mouth marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. That I think that is the most powerful way that advisors can grow their practice, is by word of mouth and by referral.
And anyone that may be listening that is in a service business understands the power of referral. It doesn't have to just be a service business. Clearly, manufacturers and others benefit from this as well. But in many times in the service business, you're really building a book of business, and that is creating a class of clients that hopefully become evangelists for you, or at least advocates, or
right.
At the very
yeah,
least says, hey, I have a person that performs this service for me, and I'm delighted with them. You ought to give them a call.
Absolutely, yeah. It definitely establishes a lot of trust right off the bat when working with a referral versus doing a seminar and, you know, meeting a room full of strangers. So it really, you know, provides a much better way for both, again, the client. Studies have shown that's the number one way clients want to meet a financial advisor, is by referral from trusted friends or family. And then from an advisor standpoint, it saves a lot of time and resources to work that way as well.
Okay, well, let's turn it a little bit and talk to me about a current unresolved challenge that you're facing inside your practice and your current thinking, at least as you've been working on this challenge.
Well, like any other small business, the main challenge we have is time management. And there's a rule, the 80-20 rule, which a lot of, you know, business owners know about. It definitely applies in our business, and that's 80% of our revenues come from our top 20% of our clients, which unfortunately translate to 80% of our time spent is with the other 20 that's not generating as much business. So what makes it hard for the advisors is that as you become established and as you start to grow the A-type clients by referral, you can't just siphon off the B and C-type clients, because these are relationships you've had for several years. So it becomes hard to manage all of these clients, but at the same time growing your top tier type client, and not just, you can't just not service the B and C type clients. So it becomes a bit of a juggling act. But because these are relationships, it becomes difficult to focus on just the higher end when, you know, you really are helping out everyone.
And if I could, Chris, because this is, I think, a learning moment, and it's certainly transferable because many, I believe in Pareto, the 80-20 rule exists in enough instances that it is factual, and business leaders look for this. Where do you get a majority of the return for a minority of your time? And then conversely, where are you spending a majority of your time for maybe, and I don't mean to sound crass, but you know, clearly one has to be able to understand their ideal client profile and then to build a portfolio. And it's almost like your own success in the marketplace can be your own challenge as you no longer have enough ample amount of time to service all your clients. Now you have to start making decisions about how best to serve each of your clients.
Right. No, that's exactly right. That is a big challenge in our practice. And when you think about it, it's a good problem to have. It's a good problem to be so successful that you have so many customers to service. But, you know, it can be a bottleneck. So, yeah, I think it's true in a lot of our clients as well, our business owner clients, is that, you know, finding the time and to grow that A-type or that target client that you're looking for.
And on top of that, you have another layer which, you know, you kind of talked about a little bit. And this is a very personal relationship that people want to have generally with their financial planner. And to be able to have access to that individual and changing maybe the expectations a bit over time just based on the fact of availability. And is probably a challenge because unlike other industries maybe where there isn't that personal relationship that's been established, a lot of your service is around that element of being there as the personal advisor to your client.
Absolutely. It is all about the relationships you develop with your clients and meeting with them face-to-face and developing these long-term relationships, not only with them, but with their spouse, with their kids, and that as well. So it's all about relationships. You're absolutely right.
Excellent. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. I'm glad to hear that as your practice has continued to grow, you're to this point now where you're facing into this type of challenge. Because, like you said, it's kind of in some ways it's a good challenge to have, but nonetheless it's a very real one. And if not managed properly, I think could move your practice backwards if you had attrition because you weren't doing it properly.
Yep, you're absolutely right. You always have to be growing, and if you can't have a focus on that, then absolutely it could be a big problem.
Well, I wouldn't be doing my job as a business talk show radio host if I didn't ask a person with your background and expertise, what is your sense for the market in 2010?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And we talk and we hear with so many economists, you know, throughout our job, and right now everything seems to be very mixed. I mean, we hear the most common advice or forecast we hear right now is single-digit growth for 2010. So hopefully the volatility of the 2008-2009 has settled in a little bit. You know, we're not having 200 to 300-point moves every day like we were, you know, a year and a half ago, which is a little bit more settling for clients. But at the same time, you know, last week was pretty bad. Today the market went up a little bit. We're hearing single-digit growth with a focus on dividend paying type stocks, collecting coupon payments from bonds. Those types of talks we're really hearing a lot of. So it's very mixed. There's still the people out there that are saying we're going to have a 20-30% correction, but for the most part, we're hearing cautiously optimistic and single-digit growth. But until we see housing stabilize, housing is still very fragile, and until we see unemployment start to look better, I think we're going to have a long road to recovery because until the fundamentals are really there, we really can't have substantial economic growth and recovery. So those are the two things I look at, and those are still a pretty big issue. So I don't think we're going to have a recovery this year. I think it's still going to be several years down the line.
Well, and And don't forget, everything you're saying is being recorded and will be available in cyberspace for eternity. So we'll be able to come back.
So we can come back and look a year from now. And
I'll have you back in a year, and we'll test how good your advice was. So that's
okay.
A real-life opportunity. But, you know, you reminded me, maybe I blocked it, but of those days when the market would move so dramatically up and down. And that then makes me remember sort of the sentiment and mentality that I sensed and had personally as well at
right.
the start of last year. Part of the reason why we started this radio show, Doug Gefeller and I, was to help our audience hear another perspective about, you know, the economy in, from talking to business owners, because a year ago, if it wasn't bad news, there was no news. And fearing the how low will it go?
Right.
You know, where is the bottom and no one knows. But in working with our members and our peer groups, we are sort of the opinion that we've just seen the worst year in our business life, and
right.
hopefully we've certainly survived to tell our grandchildren about it at some point,
right.
and that this year and subsequent years hopefully won't be what we saw in 2009.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair assessment, but the overall emotions from clients was pretty amazing to see, because 2008 was, and even the first part of 2009 was, the consensus was kind of a panic, you know, not know what to do, and so many people are close to retirement or just retired, and that makes it even more scary for them that, hey, I was supposed to retire next year, now my portfolio is taking such a hit, I don't know what to do. And our biggest challenge as advisors in that year was basically to help clients not make decisions based on emotion. Because generally when you make decisions based on emotions, they're not good for you long term. So it was quite a battle to make sure that they don't panic, but at the same time address their needs and shift with what the market was doing. So it was pretty hard, but it was a pretty good learning experience as well.
Let's just say not only in your financial affairs, it's good in life to try to take the emotion out of the decisions that you have to make. Because
absolutely. You can get a third-party unbiased opinion. It's generally worth a lot of value.
Okay. You know, Chris, there's a lot of confusion and maybe a lack of understanding for retirement plans that business owners can use that would, you know, help them lower their taxes and plan for their future.
Right.
In the time that you have left, would you be so gracious as to kind of explain some of those programs in general for our listening audience?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, since I know your audience is specifically for business owners. The business owner clients that we have, generally what we find is that they're not really aware of all the different types of retirement plans that they could do through their business and to help them save with tax strategies. So a typical employee of a company would have a 401k plan option, for example. Well, if you're a business owner, you can do a 401k, but there are several other types of plans you can do. You can open up a SEP IRA, a simple IRA, an individual K, a deferred compensation plan, profit sharing. I mean, the list is far longer for a business owner than it is for just an employee of a corporation. And I don't think a lot of business owners know all of their options. And successful business owners, especially, have the ability to stock away a lot more money than just an employee in a 401k plan can. So that would be one thing I would just throw out there for business owners, is just to make sure you understand all the different retirement plan options you can do, and to make sure that you're taking advantage of everything you can to help reduce your tax liabilities there.
And if they wanted to learn more specifically about Ameriprise and D'Amore and Associates and Christopher Quinley, what would you suggest they do, or where would they go in the internet to find
out?
Yeah,
the best is probably the website, Ameriprise.com. Gives a lot of good information about the company itself and what makes us different from a broker-dealer or the standard broker-dealer most people think about. Because Ameriprise really has a focus on financial planning, and I think we do a better job of that than anyone. So we're not just a money manager. We really look at a client's goals, what are they trying to accomplish, and meet with them often because, you know, goals change throughout life. So I think Ameriprise.com would be a good resource. And then our team specifically, the business owner is Christina D'Amore, and our website is www.christinadamore.com. and it has our team outlined there. So we have a team approach. We have a combination of senior advisors that have been with the company 20, 30 years, as well as some younger advisors like myself that are planning to be here for 25, 30 years. So our particular practice is a little bit unique in that we have experience behind the scenes helping clients, but also youth to be there for the long term as well. So Chris, the website is the best way to check us out.
Well, Chris, the time has flown by. I appreciate your thoughtful answers to the questions and the time that I know that you put into preparing for the interview. I hope that our listening audience found value, and I'm sure they did, in the answers that you gave. And I would encourage our audience, whether it's listening live today on the air or listening to a podcast at some point in the future, to take the opportunity and to find out more about Ameriprise and Christine D'Amore Associates, as well as Christopher Quinley, who's been our radio show guest today. Thanks for your time, Chris. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me. Tell Doug I said hi as well.
I will do that. Thank you for your time.
You bet. Have a good day.
Goodbye. It's a very busy world to be a business owner, a top executive, and as Christopher pointed out many times, you just don't have the time to allocate to everything that you would like. And my experience in working closely with top executives and CEOs, business owners, is many times this element of your life, the financial planning on the back end for yourself and for your family, sometimes is the last thing or one of the last things that you will dedicate time to doing. And it's clearly important as you move through and your business continues to generate success, not only for your employees and yourself, but figuring out how to transcend that into your personal planning situation. And again, I wanted to have Chris on the line because I know the quality of the work that he does for his clients and the reputation that he has established here in the Orange County marketplace. And I thought having him on the line today and being a part of the Critical Mass, the radio show here on Orange County TalkRadio.net, would open up hopefully some thoughts that you might have, as well as sharing what he's done and his experience. Doug and I believe that business owners and executives do learn best from the experience of their peers, and I believe you'll agree that Chris gave experience and information that is valuable and interesting for you as our listening audience. Every month in our executive forum CEO peer groups Doug and I facilitate here in Orange County, there's the opportunity to be in the same room with 10 other top executives or business owners from a variety of industries and never a competitor in a room. And this opportunity to share with such a diverse group of top executives, CEOs, business owners can have a significant positive impact on the quality of the decisions that our members make. And for that reason, Doug and I really wanted to bring that message to the marketplace in a differentiated way, and that's why we launched Critical Mass, the radio show, as an extension of our business model here in Orange County, California. We find that these interviews, to some degree, are a virtual peer group where we have a number of people listening, and having a thoughtful interview allows us the opportunity to get knowledge transferred between different members in the Orange County business community. I'd like to now see if my next guest, Dale Congalier, is on the line. Dale, are you there? Okay. Well, Dale will be on with us shortly. Dale is with Crenshaw Dye and Manufacturing, and I'm excited to have Dale on the show because when Dale does join our call, we're going to be talking about the evolution of his family footprint. Many of us are aware and have heard that the manufacturing base, or maybe we've experienced it directly, has been changing, and that's been an ongoing trend for quite a number of years now. And Dale's successful family business that he runs with his brother Dan now has been redesigning their business to create a business that has value within this changing U.S. manufacturing environment. And like many of the guests that we've had here on Critical Mass, the radio show, the key to being able to be successful over the long term is to be able to adapt and respond and anticipate future changes so that your business can continue to be positioned properly in the marketplace. Let me stop for a second and check if Dale has joined us on the radio show. Dale, are you there? Okay. Again, to our live listening audience today, I do apologize for the technical difficulties that we are experiencing. As you know, the loyal listening audience, generally speaking, on Critical Mass, the radio show on octalkradio.net, we're usually technical difficulty free. So today is a little bit of a surprise to me as your host, and I'm sure that our producers in the studio are working to correct this. So periodically I do need to check back to see if Dale is on the line, so I'd like to do that again and say, Dale, are you available?
I'm here.
There you go, the magic of the connection. I'm glad that you're joining our call. I'm not sure how much of the introduction you've been able to hear that I've done, Dale, but basically I've talked about your firm and your background relative to the information that we had put together and the announcement for your appearance on our radio show.
All right.
Welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show, Dale.
Well, thank you.
I'd like to start by asking you to talk to our audience about your path to your firm and help us to understand Crenshaw Tool and Manufacturing.
Okay.
Dian Manufacturing.
First of all, I started out my life as in youth ministry, and then didn't see that as my gifting, and started working here in the summers with my father. And I enjoyed all the aspects of working here, and I liked the idea of working with my dad. And I didn't start the industry with my dad. I started out with doing mold making and plastics, and spent a year polishing plastic injection molds. And then dad approached me, and he's a guy I love talking about. He took us into started the company in 1962, and he was an excellent die maker and craftsman, and that was fun to see as a kid. And then as I came into the company, I was able to see and appreciate him even more, what he was able to do and what he did in business.
You know, it's interesting that you started in the industry but not in the firm with your father, which gave you, I'm sure, some valuable life lessons and a base of experience to measure your father's firm and your involvement in it. And so let's just spend a minute, if you would, and kind of go back to that time when you first came to work with your dad.
Okay. Well, he was a great teacher, and we had our struggles as a company from the very beginning, and I saw him struggle over a lot of over and through a lot of recessions. And a lot of times of downturn, and a lot of tears and everything else. So in that aspect, I was able to glean that portion of it. I knew it wasn't going to be if I was going to ever be a business owner, I knew it wasn't going to be easy. He showed me a real firm foundation for business, and I really appreciate him for that.
You know, I'd like to ask, of all the things that you learned, and we're kind of sharing here with the different experiences that you had, some outside your current firm, some certainly most inside, is there an overarching life lesson that you use to run your firm?
Well, I'd say that the key to me in business is to be honest and compassionate, and that entails a lot of things, from employees to suppliers and vendors, as well as being true to the principles that I govern my life by. And I don't think business is any different to me than life apart from business. I'd say a second lesson I believe in is that I don't think that I can be successful in business or anything else without being diligent in everything that I do. and then having a purpose for what I do. And it's my opinion that if a person thinks his purpose for working or running a business is only to make money, that's not going to be successful. He's not going to succeed. Whether I'm running a business or I work for the other guy, my work needs to be seen as provision for my life and not my life. And then beyond my work, my life has to have a purpose, whether it's family, whether it's giving to others from someone's time, talent, or treasure. For me to be successful, I have to have a purpose outside of work or even in conjunction to work. Those are the four things that I've kind of made my life pattern after.
Well, those are four powerful principles, and I appreciate your willingness to share them publicly here on the radio show today and to the listening audience. And from my exposure to both you and your brother Dan, I can attest that I see those elements in how we've gotten to know each other in helping to get ready for your appearance on Critical Mass, the radio show.
Good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You know, one of the things that we're going to talk about now is, you know, the changes that you have made to the business in response to your clients kind of cutting out the middleman. So before I ask you that question, I can't go any further in the interview without, you know, saying that one of the things that I know that your firm also did was sort of change its name. And I have, I'm kind of working through that a little bit here on the interview today, making sure that I say Crenshaw Dye and Manufacturing rather than what I said in the announcement in your appearance, which was Crenshaw Tool and Die. So, mm-hmm. You know, what I talked about in the open, Dale, was how successful businesses that survive multi-years as well as generations have to continually kind of reinvent themselves. And I imagine the change to Crenshaw Dye and Manufacturing is an element of that continual evolution of the business. Is that correct?
That's right. We've always been a job shop stamping and manufacturing company. There's lots of smaller dye shops, there's a few larger ones, but a few with our versatility. But metal stamping has always been our main focus. We've always had experienced tool and die makers and designers, and we have, you know, probably 100 years of experience with our designers and die makers in combination. And in the early 2000s, we redesigned ourselves, and we started offering CNC cutting and punching and machining capabilities, which also includes water jet cutting. And the effort for that was to offer more diversification to our customers and our potential customers, and it gives us more flexibility with production runs. So instead of being forced to run large quantities only in as a die shop with expensive tooling, we can now make one part or five parts, 10 parts, or even 10,000 parts. So it made us a lot more versatile, and that's how we kind of transitioned into a more of a manufacturing company from a tool and die company.
Interesting. Being able to be much more, it's interesting to hear that you're able to offer as small of a lot as you are, as well as doing, larger work as well. That's certainly valuable, and probably something that in the changing manufacturing footprint that we're seeing here in the U.S. and North America in general, it's probably necessary to continue to advance the company in the marketplace.
Yes, it is. It's been, it allows us to do prototypes even then. And that lets our customer see the product before he actually goes to market with something or actually goes to production with something. So that also gives us the edge.
So, you know, we have had on our radio show, Dale, in the past year, experts on social media talking about the application for a variety of areas. Many times I think some people who hear social media think that maybe that's really the domain of service providers. Maybe you heard our earlier interview with Christopher Quinley. Maybe that's the type of companies that use tools like that. But Let's talk a little bit about what you and your brother are doing within the firm to expand the awareness of your business.
As the best we can tell, the metal industry, we're kind of pioneering and innovating, you know, by reaching out in social media. There's not a lot of people connected yet in our industry. There's some, but we're hoping that it catches on, and we're taking, you know, putting our efforts into it, and learning the different ways of broadcasting ourselves. A problem that we're kind of seeing with it is that you don't see the buyers in the model, and I'm concerned about that. The reality is that some of it's experimental in our industry. But we're making an effort at it, and we're going to see if it works for us. Beside that, we use reps. They sell our stamping and metal forming footprint, and they'll rep 5-10 lines of business or more. But they bring us to their current customers and clients. They bring us to the table, telling them what we have to offer. So that's another way we also reach out. And then we also do some 2 job shop trade shows a year, and we know that works. That gets business in, and we do some advertising in trade and magazines and internet. But just the variety. We're like everyone else, you know, racking the bushes for work. You know, we're all in the same place.
Right, and you know, I applaud your efforts in social media. I am aware of them. I've experienced them, and I see them. While I recognize the concern of not being able to see the buyers in the model, the fact that you have begun to make the effort when maybe it's not an accepted business practice in your industry yet, I think for our listening audience, that's a learning moment, in my opinion.
Yeah.
That's only an example of how you and Dan are looking to continue to reinvent Crenshaw Dye Manufacturing. That's a public way that we've talked about it, but I know within the business there would be other examples of things that you guys are doing in advance of what the conventions in the industry are to continue to make your company of value to the target audience and clients that you have. So let's talk about challenges. Would you share with our audience, Dale, maybe a current challenge that you and Dan are now facing in running the business when, as you kind of alluded to earlier in the interview, the gross sales are under pressure?
Yeah. In these times, you know, we have a tendency to get myopic, and we focus only on the day-to-day events, and we have quite a bit less forward thinking, you know, because you're just so involved in the current. Decisions are harder to make, usually because of cash flow issues, when we're under this pressure of, you know, trying to make things out of nothing. We have decisions that we have to make about keeping employees, you know, with all of the issues of job loss and everything else. You know, we have to keep ourselves lean enough, and you know, juggling, eliminating man hours and material delivery schedules, all that complicates the normal flow of work, and so we're trying to keep our material turns, you know, within a week or so, so that you're not holding out to get paid for the material that you bring in at a certain date, and we don't have as good a handle on the expenses that you thought you did. You know, you might have issues there that create problems just because of cash flow. And you know, we're trying to stay involved outside our walls, as well as, you know, in the business. And that's a real important thing to me. My father-in-law, Bob Johnson, he's deceased, but he told me before he passed on, he says, Dale, if you want to be successful, you need to work 50% on your business and 50% in your business. And that's an idea that I've latched onto and getting involved in our associations and things like that. And then it also requires, these times require creative scheduling of the operations and trying to meet the customer's requirements at a less cost, but also bring more value to them. So it's a juggling act. In reality, when you get into these times, you have to learn a little bit more how to juggle and be out in the shop and be out on the street and all these other things. So, but got to stick with it.
It's interesting, Dale, because you started by talking about under pressure, decisions are harder to make, and you have to fight the tendency to become myopic in your view as the leader and driving the direction of the company. And then you sort of segued into talking about things that you're doing to prevent that from happening, like being involved in associations and with companies that are, you know, outside your industry as well, and looking for that. And again, I think that's another opportunity to kind of reinforce with our listening audience that we all share that under stress, whether it's from revenue stress or whatever the stress might be. Your field of vision as far as the possibilities that are out there does tend to naturally narrow, and you have to make the conscious decision that you've got to push the blinders back away again, because therein may lie some of the opportunities that you need to reinvigorate the firm or to take it to the next level in performance. So I applaud what you and Dan are doing to continue to reinvent the firm and move outside of what would be maybe a comfort zone that
right.
Businesses can fall into.
Yeah, and my brother has also, you know, done CEO groups outside, and that you know, that has benefited his life here and outside of work as well.
Well, Dale, is there anything else about you or Crenshaw Dye Manufacturing that I've not thought to ask you about today?
Well, I think one thing I'd like to say is that as a company, we're doing the best, our best, putting our best foot forward to be positive, and with all the negativity in the midst of our economy, and we truly feel that as a company that we can be and we are a valuable asset to our customers, and we try to make our customers know that. The one positive thing about this economy is that it's helped level things out for a lot of us. And then people, you know, just in reality, people are becoming more basic. They're becoming more simple and more fundamental in their thinking, and people are doing with less. And, you know, that some of that hurts the economy because they're not buying as much. But in general, people are smarter, you know, and they're making smarter decisions and about, you know, their extravagance. Extravagance is almost a social sin now. You know, we and it used to be something that people would strive for, being extravagant and buying the new BMWs and everything else. And I think they're just kind of taking a step back, and they're looking at things a little bit more. But I think it's a positive takeaway from the downturn, and I think it's a necessary takeaway with the way things are going.
Interesting, and time will certainly prove that out as we are able to get some more distance. And as Chris talked about in our initial interview, from a financial planning perspective, you know, cautiously optimistic about the economy and what we can expect in 2010 and 2011. But the lessons of 2008 and 2009 will probably last maybe a lifetime for many of us.
I hope they do. You know, I think we become more stupid if we don't see history's lessons and learn from them.
Exactly. Well, Dale, if someone would like to learn more about you and Dan or Crenshaw Dye and Manufacturing, what would you suggest they do?
I would suggest that they go onto our website, which is www.crenshaw, C-R-E-N-S-H-A-W, D-I-E-M-F-G, manufacturing.com. And then we also have a toll-free number if they're looking for us to do a job for them. It's 800-654-6296. And you can email me, and I'd be happy to talk with you or call me anytime, and we can touch base.
Well, I appreciate the time you've given our audience today, the thoughtful and candid answers that you've given to my questions, and the time's gone by quickly as I expected it would, but I've really enjoyed our time together, Dale. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you inviting me on, and I wish you best of luck and good new year, and hopefully we can turn this economy around.
Well, I appreciate it, and I know that you and Dan are doing all you can within Crenshaw Dye Manufacturing to continue to reinvent the firm and present the value to the marketplace. So thank you very much for your time today, Dale.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate it.
Okay, goodbye.